world's becoming a dangerous place for us women. Lipstick Bodyguard looks just like an innocent little lipstick, but it'll instantly drop any attacker to his knees so you can get away unharmed. Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
The thing most seniors dread is their loss of independence. And for many, that day comes when they realize they can no longer safely drive themselves. This week, Diane tackles the most often asked question: what to do when it's no longer safe for your aging parents to drive?
Welcome to Parents Are Hard to Raise, helping families grow older together without losing their minds. I'm elder care expert Diane Berardi. I've been hesitating talking about this topic for a while because it's such a touchy topic for all of us dealing with our aging parents. And I'm going through the same thing with my parents. So if you're a longtime listener to the show, you know I try to give you tips from my experiences in dealing with the elderly. And you know, I tell people every day, everything looks great on paper. We can plan all this stuff on paper and it looks great. But, you know, as soon as you put a human being into the mix, it's not going to run like on paper. And there's no, you know, in every piece of information in a book or a study, okay, so that sounds good. But, you know, we're dealing with our parents. We're dealing with human beings. So nothing is concrete. So the topic of driving and, you know, our parents driving and what, you know, if we feel they shouldn't be driving anymore, what we need to do. So I'm going through the same thing with my parents. My mom is going to be 88, my dad 89, actually this month in October. So I've started to test some things with my dad, and you know from always listening to me that I tell you it's individual. You know your parents better than anyone. So I can give you suggestions and you know, maybe you have suggestions that I haven't thought about. So please, you know, send them to me and we can all, you know, you can read all information, but it's just going to, you know, you absorb it all and then see what works. And you have to experiment a little. So age should never be used as a sole factor, you know, for driving ability. But of course, as we age, some of the skills necessary for driving, for safe driving, you know, vision, reflexes, flexibility, hearing, all begin to deteriorate. So we get in a car, we don't think about all that we do when we're driving. We have to coordinate our hands, feet, eyes, ears, body movements. And at the same time, we have to decide how to react to what we see, hear, and feel in relation to other cars and other drivers, traffic signs, signals, conditions of the road, how our car is going to perform. So we're making these decisions close to other cars, trucks, buses, and we have to decide and react quickly by applying the brake, by steering, by accelerating, or a combination of these things. So, you know, imagine, you know, I'm speeding up telling you this stuff, but this is what we do. And so then you think, oh my gosh, my mom or dad, my mom's walking with a walker, you know, and then, you know, slow, and then she's going to get in a car. I mean, we've all been behind maybe an elderly person driving, you know, and you see they're driving slower. So, you know, more of our parents are going to be outliving their ability to drive safely. The one thing they have going for them, and I tell people that, is their experience, because your experience doesn't decline with age. But the thing that is the bad part that they don't have going for them is that denial of, you know, their diminishing skills. Now, because, you know, studies show, and you can see it with the elderly, that driving, stopping driving, it increases social isolation. It decreases people getting out of their home, and they become more depressed. So, you know, this is their last bit of independence. They, you know, and a lot of people say to me, sure, that's my first step to a nursing home, not being able to drive. And that's not necessarily. Sometimes, you know, what I say to people, I use that experience and I say to them, well, you know what it takes. You were a truck driver your whole life, and you know what it takes to maneuver a truck on a crowded highway, you know, because you've been driving for 85 years, so you have all that experience, and then you have your truck driver experience, so you know what it takes. And, you know, what do you think? You know, how do you feel? Do you think you can do that? You know, instead of you saying you can't do it, you ask them. And of course, some will look at you, you know, and some will stop and think about it, or they might think about it later on. Some will say, of course I can, without even thinking, you know, and you're going to expect that. But, you know, I try to bring up all kinds of things. What about intersections? You know, four-way stop signs. You got people walking. You can't anticipate, you know, someone crossing the street and you're at a four-way stop sign. What are they going to do? How do you feel about getting on a busy highway or an interstate? What about detours? Detours confuse me. So, you know, what about detours? How about your eyesight? You know, because age will bring vision problems. You know, we get older, we're sensitive to glare, our peripheral vision, colors, red doesn't appear as bright, depth perception. You know, can you judge how fast a car is coming so that you can make a left turn? So these are all things that, you know, happen. And it's tough for us because we do not want to make our parents miserable. You know, we don't want to have them trapped in their own home. We want to keep them independent. You know, we don't want to take away that from them. We want to keep them active. But we do fear for their safety. You know, we fear they're going to have an accident. We, you know, fear they're going to kill themselves or kill someone. So it is a tough challenge for us. And unfortunately, I'm hoping that it comes to, you know, you and your parents deciding or your parents deciding. I hope it doesn't come to us as children having to decide. And unfortunately, sometimes it does. A lot of elderly kind of make decisions, you know, kind of know what's going on, and they may guard against certain things. They may decide on their own. They know some of their limitations. You know, my mother, well, she never drove on highways, but my mother limits herself now. My mother knows, you know, my mother has trouble getting in and out of the garage because she keeps hitting the sides of the garage. So she'll tell my father he has to take the car out. And my mother really limits her driving. And she has no problem saying, you know, she has friends who can drive, some younger friends who can drive, or, you know, they're fine. So she has no problem, you know, having a friend pick her up. She knows her limitations. She doesn't drive at night. You know, people do. They do curb that, you know, maybe they avoid heavy traffic times. I've had people say, well, I don't make my doctor's appointments. And I tell the doctor I have to go at, you know, these specific times because I don't want to be driving when there's a lot of traffic on the road. Or maybe they don't drive on highways. They just drive around town, or they always take someone with them. So my dad, you know, here's, you know, where I'm thinking my mom kind of limited herself, and my dad does not see as well as he used to. So with him now, you know, I've asked him, and that's where I'm saying, well, I'm not going to say to him, you shouldn't be driving at night or whatever. You know, and he mentioned to me they had to go to someone's house, you know, and he says, oh, I really don't want to go, but, you know, my mother wanted to go. And I said, well, do you feel comfortable driving there? You know, because they have to go on a highway. And he said, well, yeah, I'm okay, as long as I can get home before dark. So I was like, wow, you know, he realized that on his own. He's saying, well, I don't want to drive in the dark. Of course, they left 10 minutes before it was dark. They didn't anticipate it's going to get dark, you know. And I said to them, you know, because I'm like, I'm going to call them and see if they're home. And of course, they're not home. And of course, my mother never answers her cell phone because it's always at the bottom of her pocketbook. So when they finally did get home, it's dark. And I said, I thought you weren't coming home in the dark. Well, we left when it was light. I said, yeah, but you left at 8 o'clock. So, but they're, you know, they're trying. And this is good because, you know, she knows her own limitations and he does, but it's harder for a male, I believe. I think it is easier for a woman, you know. And he said to my mom, well, what if I can't drive? Will you drive? And she says, hell no, because she doesn't, you know, she's never really been a driver. She's never barely been one to love to drive. So, you know, he's understanding that, okay, I have some limitations, but, you know, what do we do from there? And that's my next step, you know, in trying to figure out what we do. You know, I think, well, lawmakers aren't going to help. And, you know, do I think they help all the time? No, but they're not going to do anything because, first of all, people age differently and they have to create something that's going to be effective and non-discriminatory, you know, and they're not going to do that. And people, if a lawmaker said you can't drive, they're not going to vote for that person. So insurance companies, the same thing, you know, they want customers. So they're not going to say you can't drive. I had a client who the wife wrote to the insurance company and said, I'm taking my husband off the policy and you send him a letter. And she put this letter on the refrigerator. But do you think, and the husband's like, so what? I'm still going to drive. That's not going to stop somebody all the time from driving. So, and you know, people say, well, you know, my father got stopped because he crashed through an intersection or whatever, and the police didn't take his license away. Well, police cannot just take someone's license away. You know, it has to be reported to the Division of Motor Vehicles, etc. So, you know, these are all things that can happen. Some states make it a little easier, you know, because they have driver licensing laws that have specific provisions for older drivers. I think there's like 33 states in the District of Columbia that have specific requirements for mature drivers. So after a certain age, for instance, you might have to renew quicker. You know, some states may be 4 years and maybe they'll do it 2. Or if it's normally 6, they may do it in 4. They may have restrictions on mail-in renewals or online renewals. They may require a vision test. They may require a road test. So that can kind of help, you know, if you live in a certain state or your parent does, you know, and they may have to follow these requirements. Now, just because maybe a person's license is revoked, sometimes it doesn't mean that mom or dad is still going to stop driving. I'm just saying. So, you know, doctors, we say, well, why aren't doctors doing more? Well, you know, doctors don't, you know, why don't they initiate the driving talk? Well, first of all, you know, you can have dad walk into a doctor's office using a walker. He can't hear, you know, he doesn't see very well, and he drove there. But the doctor doesn't ask that. The doctor isn't even thinking that. The doctor is, you know, looking at, he may have, you know, a bunch of serious medical problems or a lot of conditions, and that's what he's looking at, that's what he's focusing on. He doesn't have the time. Or he's not going to say anything because he values that relationship with his patient and he does not want to lose a patient. So you can't always leave it up, you know, to the doctor. You know, they have this clinician's guide to assessing and counseling older drivers, and they've updated it for healthcare personnel. And when we get back from the break, I'll talk to you more about that.
I want to tell you about my friend Katie. Katie is a nurse, and she was attacked on her way home from work. She was totally taken by surprise, and although Katie is only 5 feet tall and 106 pounds, she was easily able to drop her 6'4", 250-pound attacker to his knees and get away unharmed. Katie wasn't just lucky that day. She was prepared. In her pocketbook, a harmless-looking lipstick, which really contained a powerful man-stopping aerosol propellant. It's not like it was in our grandmother's day. Today, just going to and from work or to the mall can have tragic consequences. The FBI says a violent crime is committed every 15 seconds in the United States, and a forcible rape happens every 5 minutes. And chances are, when something happens, no one will be around to help. It looks just like a lipstick, so no one will suspect a thing, which is important since experts say getting the jump on your attacker is all about the element of surprise. Inside this innocent-looking lipstick is the same powerful stuff used by police and the military to disarm even the most powerful armed aggressor. In fact, National Park Rangers use the very same formula that's inside this little lipstick to stop 2,000-pound vicious grizzly bears dead in their tracks. It's like carrying a personal bodyguard with you, in your purse or your pocket. Darkness brings danger. Muggers and rapists use darkness to their advantage. We all know what it's like to be walking at night and hear footsteps coming at us from behind. Who's there? If it's somebody bad, will you be protected? Your life may depend on it. My friend Katie's close call needs to be a wake-up call for all of us, myself included. Pick up a lipstick bodyguard and keep it with you always.
Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
So this updated clinician's guide to assessing and counseling older drivers, well, I suppose, you know, they've updated it because they do want healthcare personnel to become more involved, because that their goal is, you know, helping prevent motor vehicle accidents and injuries to older adults. And, you know, today there's more older people driving. You know, it's just growing constantly because people are living longer and they're driving longer distances, you know. They drive to see children, and children don't live, you know, typically right in the same area like we used to. And a motor vehicle accident is more harmful for an older adult than for any other age group. You know, they're more fragile, or they may have an older car that's less crash worthy. So when you talk to older drivers, they do believe that the doctor should be the one telling them that they shouldn't be driving anymore. For some, they may listen, others may not, you know. So the doctor can help determine somebody's ability to drive safely. They can refer them to a driving rehab specialist, which they have, and they can refer them to the state licensing authority, and those are the people that make the final determination. What is a driver rehab specialist? They're specially trained occupational therapists who can evaluate a driver. So a lot of people use them because they can be the bad guy. You know, they'll take your parent out if your parent agrees to do this, which, you know, that's another step in that direction. They can evaluate their skills and they take them, you know, in their area. They want to watch them in their regular routine. And, you know, they'll say, you know, there's some deficits that are so obvious that the people don't even make it out of the parking lot, you know. And then there's others that they say, okay, they may make recommendations to the doctor. Maybe it's, you know, maybe they need a special apparatus on their car, or, you know, maybe it's some kind of medication. So, or they can just say, yeah, this person should not be driving. And depending where you live, state laws vary. For instance, in Pennsylvania, doctors are required by law to report to the state patients they think should not be driving. Now, in New Jersey, we have that same rule, but it's only for people with a short list of conditions that cause convulsions, seizures, loss of consciousness, or certain motor coordinated problems. So it's very limited. So depending on where you live, you know, the departments of motor vehicle, they have this medical advisory board. So that's a panel of licensed physicians. They are appointed by the state to review medical documentation related to an individual's ability to drive. So they look at all their medical information, their medical condition, and they give the Division of Motor Vehicles or the Department of Public Safety their recommendation on a driver's license. So someone's license could be revoked if the person is found to be medically incapable of safely safely operating a motor vehicle. So how is someone referred to this agency? Well, the person themselves can report their medical condition. I don't know how often you find that, but that could happen. The Department of Public Safety can refer a person due to their medical evaluation done at the driver's license office. You know, maybe they had to be reevaluated if you live in one of those states. Or the person has multiple convictions, maybe for alcohol or drugs on their driving record. Or the police, a physician, or a private citizen is concerned and can report a person for a medical evaluation. In any state, anyone can report a dangerous driver, which will trigger an investigation. For example, I was reading that Pennsylvania Department of Motor Vehicles gets 35,000 reports a year. So the person submits, you go on your Department of Motor Vehicle, you know, website, and they submit in writing their concerns for a driver who may have a medical condition. And of course, you have to offer a detailed explanation of why it's unsafe for that person to operate a motor vehicle. And of course, they say just the facts. That's all they want to know. So also, though, physicians can help someone stay on the road longer. Maybe they will say to somebody, listen, you have to get your vision checked or you need new glasses. Or maybe they have cataracts and maybe, you know, they can have cataract surgery. Maybe they can help with arthritis. You know, maybe they have trouble turning their head or holding the steering wheel and they can, you know, they have those spinner knobs on the steering wheel. They can maybe say you need to get extra wide side mirrors, or maybe they're on medication. Maybe the dosage, you know, maybe they can adjust a dosage. So that the physicians can also help someone. Now, when you're dealing with a parent who has dementia, now that's a whole, you know, different kind of ball game. That's another problem. When should someone stop driving? Because you're dealing with not only safety, but that person's independence, their pride, their control. So every individual with dementia initially presents with a different pattern of difficulties. So depending on, you know, the specific areas of the brain that are affected. So if someone has an early diagnosis of dementia, people, you know, they're still social, they're still active, they're still driving. So you, typically if you live in the area, you as a family member are going to notice when, you know, there's definite patterns of change over time, or maybe their caregiver, maybe you don't live in the area. You know, if someone maybe just has a minor accident, it may not be attributed to their dementia. But if, you know, for instance, if somebody doesn't stop fully at a stop sign, but they've done that all their life, well, that's not, you know, a sign. That's not anything. That's just the way they drove all their lives. So, you know, as the dementia progresses, then that's where, you know, the person, you need to decide, what are you going to do? You don't want to, you know, overreact if you're driving with them either. You don't want to alarm them. So, you know, if someone gets lost in familiar area, you know, that you start to see that, that's different than getting lost in a place that they've never been before. If, you know, you have somebody always as a co-pilot and you're giving them directions, that's different than giving them directions how to drive. So what I usually tell people is, you know, if the doctor says they're in the early stages and that they can drive, then that's okay. Maybe you want to drive with them. Maybe if there's a husband and wife, maybe, you know, the wife doesn't drive and she can always sit with them and see. I know the Hartford has this agreement, you know, where if someone is diagnosed with dementia, they can sign this and say they appoint a particular person to say, okay, you have to tell me. When you tell me that I can no longer drive, then I won't. And they sign it. But that doesn't, it's not a legal document, so that doesn't mean they're going to do it either. You know, you don't know. Maybe you have parents who will. These are just suggestions. It's going to be your parents. You know, the thing with dementia, sometimes people have more trouble with judgment than memory. And then, you know, sometimes it's the memory and the judgment, you know, as that worsens, you know, that's when the person shouldn't be driving anymore. So what do you do? Well, you know, I'm sure you've heard of all kinds of things. You know, you take their keys, but they can always get more keys. You can grind down the keys, you know, take the battery out of the keyless entry key fob, but you know, they can always get another key. You know, what we've done in certain situations, you park the car, you know, at someone else's home. So it's out of walking distance. Or, you know, you disable the car, you say the car is still being repaired if you remove the car. A lot of times I say to people, especially if they have a friend, a caregiver, or a spouse, you know, let's start taking turns. You know, I haven't, you know, especially, you know, if it's a little easier if it's, I think, a wife, you know, I haven't driven in a while. Let me drive. You know, I want to keep my driving sharper. And so sometimes with dementia, that person isn't going to remember, you know, from hour to hour, minute to minute. So if you're taking them in a car, you said, I want to drive. You drove last time, you know, even if they didn't. But you can try that because that, okay, you know, they may say okay, they may not. But these are just different things you can try. Of course, you know, like my sister, brother, and I were, you know, trying to think, okay, well, what if it happens, you know, that my dad can't drive? We have to try to think of alternative plans, you know, whether that be, you know, taxi driver, maybe they're in a, if people are in a senior citizen community, they have, you know, those, they have dial-a-ride, they have all kinds of different things. So you do have to think about these things as well. And, you know, food can be delivered, prescriptions can be delivered, friends can help, you know, friends can take them out. But I know it is a tough thing. It is. And I hope we all don't have to deal with it. I hope some of us, maybe we just never have to deal with it. But if we do, you know, we have to just try different things. And I'll let you know how I'm progressing in my own life. And for my survival tip of the week, do you doodle? It turns out that doodling is more than a mental distraction. Research conducted by psychologist Robert Burns says doodles are a form of art therapy. So he says that guys typically draw geometric shapes like squares and circles, whereas women sketch faces. I must have a lot of male something in me because I always doodle geometric shapes. There's no way I doodle faces, but that's just me. So they say that doodling is a great outlet for creativity. They say it's great for concentration. They did a study back in 2009 where investigators said that they discovered that people who were on the phone and listening and were doodling, they were able to recall 29% more material afterward. So you might think somebody's not paying attention, but they are. They say that doodling promotes an emotional release. It encourages humor. Well, you look at what you drew, and I guess it could be funny. I don't know. And it's useful for anxiety. They said it keeps you, one of the benefits of doodling is that it keeps you focused on the here and now. And it may help you solve problems. You know, something you maybe you've been working on, and it distracts you, possibly, you know, from focusing on that problem, and you may come up with a solution. I just wanted to say thank you so much for all your input, your encouragement, your emails, and we're a community here. We all, you know, are going through the same issues or at the same time with our parents. So if you have successfully figured out something about, you know, how to diplomatically get your mom or dad not to drive, or any kind of encouragement, any kind of story, anything you can help, you know, tell us, please write into me and please let me know so that I can share it with everyone. So, of course, I've talked too much. So, if this week's show was helpful to you, or you know someone who would be helped by it, please tell them about it. They can subscribe to the show using iTunes. You can find links to the topics we just talked about in the show notes for today's episode, episode 28 at parentsarehardtoraise.org. I'm here to help, so please tell me if there's something you're struggling with, and I'll try my best to include it in a future show. Email me at diane@parentsarehardtoraise.org. You can reach me through my website, dianeberardi.com. You can follow me on Facebook at Parents Are Hard to Raise, and I tweet at Jersey Elder Care. Parents Are Hard to Raise is a Counterthink Media production. The music used in this broadcast was managed by Cosmo Music, LLC, New York, New York, under license of Broadcast Music, Incorporated. Thank you so much for listening. See you again next week.